You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 208, Thursday, April 2nd. Thank you guys for joining us and happy baseball. We are underway. We got a week in the books. Steve, I know we were laughing. A week one in the books for Yahoo leagues, but that's pretty weird way to do things. But very fun to be underway. We got stats rolling in. Just we're back, man. We're back. And tonight is a great show because it's kind of the antidote to overreaction season, where we're instead of freaking out about some back of the baseball card stats, looking at a handful of year over year changes that actually make a little bit more of a difference under the hood, from bat speed to pitching velocity, new pitches, off-speed velocity. So yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Steve, great to be back. How's it going, man, in the early days?
It's awesome. It's awesome. Yeah, the first week of baseball, it's like that Bugs Bunny meme. We're back. It's over. Ripping off the calendar. You know, that gif. That's what being back into the swing of things in baseball, and you know, being in last place in my home league right now and just dreading everything and wanting to go back a week and a half and draft a totally different team, like, it makes you feel that kind of way, and it's hard not to overreact. But that's what we're going to do. We're not going to overreact. We're going to look at things that are meaningful in this sample, things like bat speed, things like velocity, things like pitch mix changes that don't necessarily even need a stabilization point, because you can't even really have those conversations. Like, I'm not like putting on anyone blasting or anything like that, but like, I saw like an ex-WOBA leaderboard, you know, like these are the guys that are underperforming based on what,
four games, eight
balls in play. Like, come on, like we have to be, I know it's now like, now Twitter has become like just a, you know, a game to sort of bait and engagement farm and things like that, do numbers in certain senses, but like, you know, it's frustrating at times. I mean, it's frustrating when your team's struggling. It's frustrating trying to, you know, be patient and not even have the data to show you that you can believe in certain things. You're kind of flying blind at this point, but I think that what we're going to break down and look into is meaningful, is actionable, while also balancing that line of not overreacting to small samples and having that fine line of making sure you're doing the right things to add the players that we talk about that could be important adds in early April, but also not do anything rash and dumb.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good summary. It's always the toughest balance to exercise some patience early on, because it's extreme FOMO. Like when you see anybody going off and they're available in your league, if you're like me, in the back of your mind, you're like, oh, my buddy's going to pick him up or somebody else is going to pounce. And that's okay. I mean, we say every year that obviously for a couple reasons, there are more breakouts this time of year than any other 2-week window. And then you also get to roster them for the entire season, so it makes way more of an impact. That said, how many times have we given up way too quickly on a guy, or seen other managers do that, and then you can kind of shop in the bargain bin? And I think that's kind of what some of this might point to, because a handful of names we're talking about tonight, I mean, there's some pitchers that are definitely mid breakout or look like they're fully back to who they once were, but certainly for like bat speed, not all these guys are popping in terms of, you know, end result. And it's still worth putting them on a watch list or seeing, okay, if they sort the contact, this could be a real breakout. And I think that's equally helpful to assess. But Steve, I know you had at the top of the rundown here thoughts on ABS. And I wonder if we'll differ on this, but you know, TJ, one of our diehard WAF fans and is a purist, he's always pushing back on any of these changes. My take, I think they've done a better job than any other sport. Like, as a diehard soccer fan, Chelsea fan, VAR on like automated, like checking goal line technology and offsides and did somebody foul or handball. That annoys me. NFL and replay review can feel like cumbersome, or people looking at the Jumbotron before they throw a flag. That the baseball, I love that there's a little bit of a game within the game with this. Mm-hmm. It feels very baseball that it can only be the pitcher, catcher, or batter. And the 2 second window is great. Like losing them if you don't get it right, I think is fun, that it's like an extra head game pressure. So I've kind of enjoyed it. I have a hunch there's going to be some epic moments in the playoffs this year with this. And I think it's got just enough of a human element tied to it that to me, it still kind of lives in that like romance of baseball, even though any change takes some getting used to and everything. And I'm not for making umps out to, you know, be embarrassed and everything, but you get it right. And if you don't, then it's just one extra little flex. If who was it, like Eugenio Suarez or somebody who had the back-to-back helmet taps and got both of them right. Yeah, exactly. The crowd's going nuts. So I'm good with it. What are your thoughts?
I have extremely mixed feelings. Okay. I am just as frustrated as anybody and called for robots umps if I'm, you know, following a game and my pitcher's in the sixth inning and needs one more out and gets a clear strike, call the ball. I'm freaking out. You know, I'm pulling up the game feed on the at-bat app and looking where it was and raging. I get it. I want those calls to be right. I do. Same thing if a hitter if it's the hitter the other way. At the same time, I don't know how I feel about overturned calls on balls and strikes. I like the human element of it. I see these calls that just nip the strike zone and it's like, all right, yeah, by the rule that was a strike, I guess, like, but that's what we're really arguing over.
Yeah, it's like it's a fringer on that one.
And then at the same time, yes, we're correcting these umpires, but we're also seeing like how close these things are. Like every time I see an overturn, it's like 0.02 inches outside the zone that was called a strike. It's like, you know, this is close. They're really good. They're getting most of these calls right. And then at the same time, what? Mike Petriello put out the numbers. It's like 48 or it's like essentially half of, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but half of the challenges are being overturned. I know catchers are a bit more successful, hitters a little bit less, pitchers like aren't allowed to do it and are the least successful, obviously, because they're so biased. I'm just torn at it. I also was concerned at first about the pace of the game. I don't think it's too big of an issue. There's not that many challenges in the game, and it goes by pretty quick. But at the same time, we also did all this work to add the pitch clock and all these other rules to speed up the game, and it's worked, and now we're
going
the other way. And, like, also, yes, it's a national story, and, like, you know, it's in every article, not even baseball-related, but, like, this is what we want baseball to be in the news for because of the strike zone and calls, balls and strikes. Like this little automated sideshow thing is the reason why baseball is the talk of the town, and it's not like these rookies who are on fire and the interesting performances from the beginning of the season and these, you know, the Dodgers starting off, you know, sweeping a series and things like that. It's like, okay, you know, it's torpedo bat feely, like, you know, that sort of news story, but this is going to be here to stay. So I see the positives. I also am a little bit jaded and a little bit of a purist on the specifics of called balls and strikes. I do also like that it's making umpires accountable, because I think that's a huge issue. God forbid an umpire ever admitted they got a call wrong. And I get they need to protect themselves, and it is an extremely hard business because they're only noticed when they get things wrong and they're expected to get everything right. So that's a tough balance too, but I think I was more like 60-40 negative positive maybe after the first few games. Now I'm closer to probably 50-50, but I'm not like screaming at praises like some other people are all the time. But you know, it's just a very torn feeling for me.
It's fair. I think I would chalk mine up that I've been so like jaded by how other sports do it that I think if it's like binary that it's going to happen, I think I like the way that it feels and the pace and everything. So yeah, that's our quick note. Now we've talked about it like, you know, everybody's aunts and uncles will at Thanksgiving this year. Yeah. So we can check that off the box. And yeah, getting into this topic, I mean, the level set here is we're 1 week in, right? And we've got 20 weeks ahead of us before like fantasy playoffs for most head-to-head leagues. You know, this is short sample size. So we talked about you got to be careful on overreacting. But like we said, we're going to look at bat speed changes, some velocity readings on pitchers, which do change start by start. Even that is something that we got to look at, you know, tonight. And, oh, this guy pitched and, you know, Matthew Liberatore, his velo looked up in the first start. And then today it looked like it was back at 93.8. So, you know, some of this stuff is still moving targets. But the point is, and it's a good one, credit to you, Steve, that like these are things that they don't take as much time to stabilize. And they're the kind of tools beneath the surface that often lead to big change. And the change could be good. The change could be bad. But it is something real that's different. So with that said, we're starting on the offensive side with bat speed changes. And you guys can go out. Baseball Savant has a great leaderboard where you can look at year over year. You can filter by all these different stats. So we're looking at bat speed. And it's a fairly new stat, the kind of these swing metrics. And it's not always to say, I mean, Kyle Bland's done great work that like bat speed is great, but there's also kind of the swing distance.
Yeah, like in the acceleration that takes into account how long your swing is, yeah, and how exactly quickly you're getting to that top speed, yeah.
So, you know, some, generally speaking, high contact hitters like your Luis Arias types will have lower bat speed but a shorter swing. And then you got an O'Neill Cruz or a Giancarlo Stanton who will have, you know, really high bat speed, but they also have a really long, big swing, and that generally tends to be the guys who have flirted with 30% strikeout rates in their career. So the swing acceleration that Kyle talks about and has a tool for on PL Pro is to look at acceleration where it's kind of the best of both worlds, or being fast with a short swing can kind of bring you contact and more pop. But we are looking at the raw bat speed risers, if you will, from last year to this year. So Steve, maybe we'll break these up into a few, but looking at the top 10 improvers from last year to this year, and as you've noted here, the average bat speed was 72.2 miles per hour, and that was in 2025. And so these, we'll say the first three that are big risers were Pete Crow Armstrong, Liam Hicks, and Matt McClain. And I think McClain kind of jumps out because of the fact that he had one of the loudest spring trainings out of the entire league this year. And then we start the season and it's been dismal on the back of the baseball card. It's, you know, people are in shallow enough leagues wondering like, oh, was it a complete hoax? Is it the Michael Franco thing where he dupes us in spring and it's time to drop him? So we have to look at that. And then Liam Hicks, catcher's deep, but another catcher who his bat speed last year was, you know, like fifth percentile. And this year it ramped up quite a bit, still below average, but like a big jump on that. And then Pete Crow Armstrong, obviously not as actionable for fantasy purposes, but or at least for kind of waiver wire purposes. But last year was at like a 61st percentile. This year it's up to 85th percentile so far, which I think is encouraging because PCA is a guy who's kind of had somewhat of a frosty like Statcast page other than, you know, like barrel rates when he would just yank, you know, to right field. And that's where his 30 homers came from last year. So for these first three, what are your thoughts and kind of assessing these risers?
Yeah. And just a quick overall point, like bat speed, it's just a great measure of raw power. It's correlated with like max exit velocity. You can sort of look at it like that, which is, know, Max Vossley is a sample of one. Bat speed, you know, the denominator is swings. So we're competitive swings, right? Savant does a good job, like, ruling out, like, swings that...
Bunts.
Yeah, bunts, check swings, things like that, that would bring that average down. So swings with, like, intent that they're actually swinging at the ball. And there's other ways to look at it. I know Eno Saris put out, like, a 75th percentile bat swing, and you could sort of break that down into, like, A swings and B swings and get into the weeds with that. For me, like, raw bat speed at this point in the season, just whatever, a weekend, six games that most guys have played, five games, whatever it is, it's a way of telling, A, who's healthy, and then B, someone that's changed their swing or their approach and is swinging the bat harder and therefore potentially going to tap into more in-game power. There's obviously a lot more to that. You could swing the bat as hard as you can and still not be a great hitter. You know, the Savant leaderboard is just the raw overall, you know, bat speed leaderboard. If you sort by average bat speed, it's not always the greatest hitters. You know, even, you know, just looking at 2025 as an example, there's, you know, O'Neal Cruz was, you know, despite having power and speed, hit 200 last year. Like, there's flaws in that. So you need to take that with, you know, somewhat of a grain of salt or just concern. Yes, there's a lot of players that swing hard, but there's also Matt Wallner that we like for, you know, for these reasons, but also doesn't mean that there's still a lot to do is the point.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty,
having raw bat speed. Yeah.
It's a pretty reasonable comp to say the parallel on pitching would be like fastball velocity or something where it's like, you might see a guy blown up, but if you know that guy throws 99 and then you see him have a really good start, he's got your attention no matter
like
what.
Like how Nick talked about empty
like.
Velocity. Like, it's possible to have elite bat speed and also not be a great hitter.
Point.
Like,
you
prefer to have it or not, but it's not the end all be all. In a certain sense. So
for these three guys, what are you, anything major that
McClain
jumps out?
McClain is the biggest jump for me because, like, shoulder injury, missed the whole year, had struggles coming back, was injured again. Like, this is confirmation to me that he is fully healthy. And when Matt McClain is fully healthy, he is a really good player. Something that I'm very interested in and glad that I was able to get at least one or two shares of him. I know he was, this spring was on fire, but the fact that, you know, he had his bat speed last year was 18th percentile at 69.7 miles per hour. It's now up to 72.3, which is not elite. It's more middle of the pack, but, you know, in line with his 2023 when he was, you know, on his way to what looked like was becoming a breakout player there and a guy that we were really interested in for fantasy purposes. So very, very encouraged by Matt McClain and that increase in bat speed.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, early on, again, you don't want to overreact, but some of the plate discipline metrics are things we look at sooner than the rest
for
of the stuff.
And
so that kind of pairs nicely with looking at bat speed, but McClain, he has had a few good barrels. That's a little bit more like end result. Don't overreact. But the chase rate and the whiffs, which are correlated but not always, you know, an exact match, both of those are down for Matt McClain, which is a good thing, right? It's like, okay, he's swinging the bat faster, harder, and he's not chasing as much, and he's not swinging and missing as much. His zone contact is up. So with Matt McClain comically having a 220 OPS in this first week of baseball after he had a 1540 OPS in spring for those shallow leagues. I know by the end of draft season, he'd kind of crept up to the early mid 100s, it seemed. If anybody moves on quickly because of kind of those FOMO waiver wire ads, I think from this show and this rundown, to me, like you said, Steve, it indicates health. It also indicates a little bit of, I don't know, selectivity, or that he's not completely selling out any contact or swing decisions just to swing harder. So I would be ready to pounce if anybody kind of moves on from Matt McClain. He seems like just a cold start is basically what happens, especially when you consider the, you know, the lineup, the home ballpark, all that good stuff. So yeah, I would agree. And then Liam Hicks and PCA, I think are more just, you know, be on notice for that. The next few that we have here, Isaac Collins, Cam Smith, Michael Harris II, and Jackson Merrill. So we'll leave that there. But I find a few interesting here, Steve. So Isaac Collins is one that, that you flagged, age 28, outfielder for the Royals, undersized a little bit, and pretty good plate discipline skills to begin with coming into the season. But his bat speed last year was 61st percentile, and this year it's up above 85th percentile. So that's kind of power prime, you know, of his career. He had 16 steals last year, just the nine homers. So there's, you know, if the power takes a step forward, the breakout could look like, you know, 2020 plus, which again, you're kind of dreaming after 1 week, but that one's interesting to start. So would love to hear your thoughts on Isaac Collins.
Yeah, it's surprising we're saying this with someone with a 111 batting average, has only had 10 plate appearances and a 30% strikeout rate heading into today's game.
Right. No other podcast is talking about.
I think he had a double today too, if I'm not mistaken, maybe one other hit too. But yeah, there's some interest, like, you know, he clearly knows his zone. He does not chase at all. He was 98th percentile last year, 13% walk rate, has that speed, isn't chasing again this year. I'm sure there's swing and miss in this game, so that's part of it. But if he could add 10 more homers, then it's a really interesting player, right? Like 1916 last year with a 263 average is super impressive. And then in OBP leagues too, like, you know, you're talking about a guy that's viable probably in every league, right? He's a righty, he's a switch hitter, plays good defense, so should find his way. Like, I don't see why the Royals wouldn't play him most days. He has started 4 out of the 5 games. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the Royals moving their fence in. Like, this is a good way to get exposure to that. Like, the Royals lineup looks better overall. So yeah, this is like super deep and kind of sneaky, but like
kind of an NFBC one.
Yeah. Like, I'm looking to see if he's available in TGFBI. I doubt he is, but if he is, like, you know, this is like an ad in 15 team leagues for me with like a watch
Like 12 teamers in 12 or something.
Team leagues. Sure.
I really like it. Like, for all the reasons you brought up, I do think for the most part he should play every day. And yeah, that, like, the plate discipline isn't really bad. His sprint speed doesn't like jump off the page, but he was clearly running last year.
Yeah.
And he attempted 23. So like, I think the intent is great there. Yeah, and if you really just want to overreact
stole,
to the
stole
stuff, you're not
70. Stole 24 bases in 2024 in the minors. Stole 29 in 2023. Like, he's had 30s, upper 20s, basically all stops in the minors. So it's part of his game.
I like it. It's a really good name. Another one that's been more on the radar in the past year or so is Cam Smith, who, of course, big prospect for the Cubs, comes over to the Astros and was disappointing for sure. Like, I know there was a lot of buzz last year, and this one I would put into the category of wait and see. This is a watch list one, because last year he had a high bat speed anyway. It was like 84th percentile. Mm-hmm. So far this season, 98th percentile. So now we're seeing him, you know, basically swing out of his shoes, which on one hand can be a good thing. I mean, I know we've talked about the comp. We'll probably bring it up at different spots. But like, George Springer, for people who haven't heard us show after show talk about Springer last year, when the big breakout, his narrative was that he wanted to go for his A swing on all pitches. So kind of willing to have a little more swing and miss if it meant, you know, when he made contact, it was going to do some damage. And he just gunned for it at age 35. Cam Smith is 23 years old and, you know, heralded prospect. I think the problem is the swing decisions look worse so far this season, and they were already pretty bad. So there's holes in his swing, but his kind of, you know, untapped power grade is like 70 on his prospect report. So we need the contact to come along. But if it does, Cam Smith is, you know, a guy that could offer elite power speed. So I don't know. It's like when you look at a guy that has 98th percentile bat speed and 95th percentile sprint speed last year, I don't want to say O'Neill Cruz, that's too far, but like that's the type of mold, because he right now is kind of grading out to be a 220 to 220 or 230 type of hitter. It's just a matter of what can those other like homer steal stats look like if he can take a little step forward with the contact skills. So yeah, Cam Smith right now, he is locked in on seventh in that order, but playing every day in right field. I guess that's not necessarily true, because Alvarez, they've been shuffling around to get Isak Paredes in the lineup, and Yordan Alvarez played a couple games there, but for the most part, he can control his own fate a little bit if he can take a step forward. Not sure I would move on this yet, Steve. I'm not sold, but he's a perfect example. In 2 weeks, if I see him rattle off a few multi-hit games in a row, I might add him sooner than his stats would suggest.
Yeah, I mean, he's just has all the raw tools in the world, right? Huge prospect, you know, came to the, he's 23 years old, had a full season at just 22, like, you know, yeah. Just someone that could potentially be
a star, probably.
Yeah, a star. Like the
if it worked.
I'm trying to keep it tempered as far as expectations go, but
right.
Yes, like the reason why he was involved in the Kyle Tucker trade is because the Astros viewed him as someone that could potentially be somewhat of a replacement, or most of the replacement of a player of the caliber of Kyle Tucker. Now that's obviously an extremely high end outcome for him, but he has the tools to do it, is the point.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great that he's on this list, but like I need Cam Smith to show gains in other areas. Like, you know, the bat speed was already really good, and we know that the raw tools are there, the raw power is there, but it's like, all right, you need to, you know, show better command of the zone and maybe chase a little bit less and make some more contact. And that's not truly the case yet, but it's also still super, super early. And we have plenty of time for that to come to fruition. And, you know, despite all that, like, he still only struck out 28% of the time. I know that's still a high number, but at his age, coming from Double A right to the majors and being thrust into the middle of the Astros lineup essentially last year, he held his own for the most part. And, you know, now he is walking more this year, and we're going to see what's happening. I know that, you know, maybe the underlying numbers behind those walks show that that could be a little bit of a smoke and mirror with the 20% walk rate there to start. But there's potential here. And, you know, the fact that he's swinging this hard just goes to show how much raw talent is there. And I think it's more of just a matter of if, not when, with Cam Smith.
Yeah, and he homered on Monday. It was kind of a wall scraper. But, like, again, the takeaway is, if he homers two more times in the next week, like, we might be on notice that, like, this is why.
If he's out there, if he's out there in like 12 teams leagues, it may not be for long.
Yep, exactly. Michael Harris II is the next one. I don't know if we want to add anything on this, but similar story. While the bat speed has gone up from good all the way up to, I mean, it's almost the same rate from like 80th percentile up to 95th percentile. The problem is, like Cam Smith, we're seeing more chases, more whiffs, and it's a similar story, right? I think we could, in a way, copy and paste some of that. I know that he doesn't have as much of the contact issues, like, you know, he's more of a 250 hitter, but it's been a slow start to the season for him and a handful of other Braves. Could it be another one of those years? But I don't know if we have anything different to add on Michael Harris. Steve, open to your thoughts, but otherwise, just for our listeners to note, he is on this riser list as well.
No, not much to add there. Just encouraging. And you know, Michael Harris is a guy kind of like Cam Smith. They came up super young. And he's still only just 25. And despite some of those slower starts in previous seasons, like he went 2020 last year.
That's true.
I know that the OPS wasn't great. It's never going to be really elite just because he does not walk, and the OBP isn't going to be great because of that walk rate. But
he's got a rough fantasy brand because it seems like he always starts slow and frustrates managers. You know what I mean? Like
he's like a poor man's
Brian Dozier back in the day,
or Julio Rodriguez, right?
Yeah, Julio. Yeah, a little bit with Lindor. Some of those guys, people tend to get real frustrated managing. But Jackson Merrill is the next one on the list. Steve, his went from a step down from Harris and Cam Smith. So he was last year at 47th percentile, but of course he was riddled with hamstring ankle injuries that we've talked about that led to the draft day discount. And this year it's already up, which is great to see. So now it's up to 84th percentile. I know this is your boy, Steve, so I'll let you talk about this, but I assume this means we got a healthy Jackson Merrill, right?
Yeah, I think so. That it's super encouraging on that end. I was hoping that it would be in line with his 2024 and then all of those other skills come into play and into line. But if it's above and beyond that, maybe we could be looking at someone that, you know, right now I probably would have projected them for like 18 homers, but maybe it could be closer to 25. And that surprising number, they had 24 in 2024. So definitely encouraging point. And glad that it's a sign that he's looking healthy.
Yeah. For context, in 2024, which again was that breakout rookie campaign with 24 homers and .292 average, that excellent season, his bat speed was 56th percentile, and now it's up to 81st percentile. So, yeah, we could see a step forward for Merrill, which I think we were all kind of liking that. But I know I was challenging that too, Steve, of like for that to happen, we did like the Ben Zobrist comp of like, is he just going to be like pretty good in a handful of categories? But again, this is kind of a raw tool indicator that can lead to at the end of the year saying, man, I didn't think Jackson Merrill had 30 homers in him. This is the type of stuff that can lead to those breakouts. So, yeah, I think Merrill's a great one there. We got a few more hitter names and then a bunch of pitching to get to, but we're up for our first ad break. We'll be right back after this. Okay, so jumping back into hitters, I'll just rattle these off, Steve. Maybe we can just stop and punch in on anyone specifically if we want to, but JT Realmuto is in a similar space of Jackson Merrill, where he kind of went up from, you know, like 50th percentile up to like 75th plus, gained 2 miles per hour. Try to use the percentiles because it seems small when you're like, oh, it's only 2 miles per hour, but those are big swings in this. Yeah. Spencer Steer is kind of an interesting one just because it seemed like he was a ho-hum, kind of an oatmeal value pick for the Reds in draft season. And yeah, his moved up from kind of poor to good enough to get by, if you want to put it that way. He's just 13% rostered in Yahoo. So I think for a lot of listeners, that's actionable if we see him string together some good days. I know today was not a good day. As we record Wednesday, he had 3 strikeouts versus Paul Skeens, but there is upside here. He had 21 homers last year. I think Steer, for whatever reason, maybe it's just me, I think of him as like kind of a older veteran, and maybe it's because all the other youngsters like Sal Stewart and Ellie and everything on that team, but he's only 28 years old. So he's entering power prime. Maybe if everything clicks right, we could see like an upper 20s type of home run season for Steer, playing time dependent. And then Adley Rutschman is one that we've had no idea like who he is as a hitter, what we're going to get out of him. And it's encouraging that the bat speed is improving. It's still just getting up to like 50th percentile, but that's a heck of a lot better than 25th percentile. So Adley, that's a quick note on him. And then Trey Turner and kind of a player who you just think is going the other direction, or a finished article. he's bumped his up a full mile per hour as well. So again, less actionable unless you're kind of trade targeting there, but Real Muto, Steer, Adley Rutschman, Trey Turner, you want to zoom in on any of these guys, Steve, or anything to add?
You know, I think it's nice to see Adley on this list,
mm-hmm.
just because we sort of theorized back in 2024 that he had a ball off his hand as a catcher, and we sort of wrote off that second half in 2024 when he fell apart after the first half when he was like on his way to becoming what seemingly was like the top catcher in the game that we envisioned him as a prospect. And then last year was more disappointment to be back on a leaderboard like this where there is a jump in bat speed. And it's not that Adley was someone that had elite bat speed even when he did have his great years. Like back in 2023, it was, you know, 23rd percentile, but he was still really good then. In 2024, I don't have a split, but it was 14th percentile. So to see a jump to where he could be closer to league average is encouraging. And there is also, you know, a bunch of other stuff to like under the hood as far as the plate discipline things for Adley as he goes. So could be sort of a bit of a post-hype re-breakout in a sense for Adley, which I'm a fan of Adley Rutschman. I'm hoping that happens and think there is more upside, and it's just been sort of written off because of how disappointing he's been for the last 2 years.
Yeah, he's one on the flip of Steer where like I look at Adley and I'm like I still look at him as kind of a youngster in the league, and he is 28, so it's just odd that those two are the same age. But yeah,
if you're college, right? Yeah,
exactly.
Catchers take longer. Yeah,
if you're into the overreaction stuff, of all the names we've talked about, Adley's, you know, savant page is definitely the one that's lit up with the most red of like everything so far this season has been hard hit. The average exit velocity is 95th on, but it's, you know, those are what, like five balls in play.
Yeah, he looks good. He looks good.
He does look good. Yeah. And the play discipline is a great high floor to pair with a gain like this. And it looks like that hasn't been a trade-off. So, yeah, that's great. Shifting topics fully to the pitching side, starting with velocity improvers, and you go straight to fastball. We do have a subsection here for breaking stuff as well, where velo increase can matter for that. But for just out and out, who's throwing their fastballs faster, that is a great indicator. And so we'll just kind of rip through a few of these names and open it up, kind of a loose segment. But got to start with Kodai Senga. And Steve, a shout out to you, man. I know the industry jumped on this, I would say, in the last 2 or 3 weeks of draft season. His ADP shot up maybe 40, 50 picks. I believe you were in on this in like early February. So great.
Did we take him in the PO mock? Did we take him in the PO mock?
We might have. We'll have to look that up. But Kodai Senga, this is not a small jump. It went from 93.7 last year up to sitting 97 right now, or 96.9. But Nick Pollock did an awesome breakdown on X. If you guys haven't seen it, some of the video content's really cool. But just 2 minutes of kind of breaking down pitch by pitch of what Senga's doing. He struck out the entire side on with a put-away pitch being the fastball every time. He is dotting it up and away on hitters. Like, he really looks locked in right now. So good luck prying him away from whatever manager took the investment. But this looks like of all of the, it feels like there were probably 10, 12 names in the past 3 days that were like the popular ads, which I was like, you know, the looking out the window raining meme, because I missed on all of them. But I think Senga is the one that I would say is the most likely bet to end up as like a bounce back breakout this year. So Senga is an awesome one. Steve, take your victory lap, man. Anything to add on Senga here?
I can't do a victory lap here on April 1st as we record this now, even with, was it two starts? Or I think it was just the one start in the book for Senga. So still a long way to to go there, but it looks like he's healthy. Like Senga, Shota, and Monaga, who we'll get to on this list, it's like these guys were clearly hurt, and the fact that velocity is like a really big indicator of health, I think, is super encouraging and makes me upset that I don't have more shares of those guys. Like Senga looks like he's fully back, and then potentially then some, like mm-hmm. Nick was breaking down there on his pitcher breakdown. So yeah, definitely be sure to check it out, and super exciting, glad these guys look healthy, and definitely encouraging as far as the velo goes, because like Senga, like just think about it, he has that ghost fork. It's not going to work as much if you could sit on a 94 mile an hour fastball and lay off a splitter, whereas, you know, you have a 97 mile an hour fastball to deal with that you need to react to quicker. You're going to get more swings on that ghost fork because you have less time to decide, oh, wait, is this a fastball or not? Like, it's going to throw off these hitters' timing. So,
he was
getting into a really, really good groove in the end of 2023. Like once he got used to the ball, there was times where he pitched like an SP1 for stretches. Like I remember, like there was a game versus the Phillies in May where like he struck out like 13 guys or something like that, and it clicked, it figured out, and he was mm-hmm. building up velocity, was throwing hard again at that point, and like I think that we could confidently. There's more confidence that we can get back to that level with this level of velocity that's
out for sure and 97 undersells it. I mean, he has put away pitches against the Cardinals were touching 99, so yeah I mean, Senga looks like he's back. Dustin May is the next one. Speaking of Cardinals, the jump was from 94.3 up to 95.9, so significant. It wasn't a good start by any stretch, so you know, he's kind of a streamer in the right matchup, depending on league size. I did add him because it was like a Sunday start, but it was a rough start. I think there's still reasons
bad results
to be
wise,
interested.
There was some good stuff under the hood. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. Dylan Cease is the next one who just, you know, probably one of the best starts of the year across the entire league, but looks really, really good. And I mean, it might be time we start giving the Blue Jays more credit as an organization for what they've been doing.
I know.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That just seems like, and you Savage, like they're figuring it out. I think
very underrated pitching development organization. Very underrated. Cease looks amazing. Like,
I mean, you get like Eric Lauer coming and look at, and granted it's, you know, who was that against, like the White Sox or something? I forget who everybody was striking out, or Athletics, I think.
Cease has like Cy Young potential, like, on his, like a year of Cease with an 8% walk rate rather than the 10% with how many bats he misses, and the fact that he could flirt with like a 35% strikeout rate, or he could, you know, he has and he could. You just need like a little bit of BABIP luck, and you know, there you go. You have Cease with a 250 strikeout season, and a 2.3 ERA, like. Mm-hmm. A Blue Jays pitcher that they did well with too, that won the Cy Young, in Robbie Ray. Like they've done that before. Like is Dylan Cease not just like what Robbie Ray was in his prime? Like,
yeah,
they're the same pitcher.
Yeah. I think they definitely are. They're definitely the same fantasy archetype. So yeah, I think that Cease should be back to that territory. I mean, I guess I won't say should. It's been one start, but going back to like 2022 when Cease had 230 strikeouts, 185 innings, and a 2.20 ERA, we wouldn't be shocked at this point.
He's done it before. Yeah, it's just it's inconsistent with the walks. Like that's why he has up and down seasons. You know.
Yep. One I am pumped to talk about, Steve. Jansen Junk. If you go from Cease, the most rostered of the entire show, pretty much, to Jansen Junk, who is rostered in 1% of Yahoo leagues, just hilarious to see of all the like the pitcher list cards that come out, and all these Stuff Plus leaderboards coming from every Stuff model known to man. Jansen Junk is just landing on the top of these leaderboards. with what was like a pretty good start. But for the purpose of this topic, the velocity was up for Jansen Jung from 93.5 to 95.5. And we always talk about that range, right? Like the 92 to 94, like mm-hmm. if you can jump in that range, it means a ton. And this was against the White Sox, but he had five strikeouts and four and a third. The ratios weren't sparkling, but between the velo bump and all the stuff plus stuff popping, he gets the Reds at home, so in Miami next week. Any interest here? I mean, this is one that we would look back and like crack up at of like, remember when we thought Jansen Jung was maybe going to be a thing, but.
Or it could be. Remember we thought Jansen Jung was a thing?
So what do we think? Let's look at this one closer because he would be available in like industry leagues.
Most leagues, yeah. I'm pretty interested. The Reds on the road, just short term, were very streamable last year as far as facing them as an offense. So that's yet to be seen. They do have a deeper, better lineup, so maybe that'll not be as mm-hmm. prevalent this year. But it's still definitely something to take a shot on just because I like the Marlins home ballpark. I like the stuff. There was a bit of prospect pedigree here with Jansen Jung drafted by the Yankees and someone that has taken a while, but there's something that's clicking here. A 12.7% swing strike rate in that first start, the velocity, the stuff.
Yeah, like looking at
really good. Yeah.
Looking at the repertoire changes, like last year he was fastball first at 38%. It dropped in this start down to 26 and change, and what subbed in was the slider, which has more spin. It had higher whiff
rate.
Primary
pitch, yeah. Yeah.
Yep, it was his primary pitch, which I know is like the Waskery Noah beware. Mm-hmm. Parable, but the changeup was last year he threw the changeup was a show me pitch at like 7%. Mm-hmm. In this one start, it was up to 18% and got a handful of whiffs on it. So, like, of course, it's one game. We got to be careful here, but I think these are the reasons why the stuff rates are like popping. A lot more movement on his fastball as well. So that's. Like these are the names, right? That like you only get kind of one look. So if it, on his next start, it might be one where you mark the calendar. And if he rattles off 8 Ks in 5 innings, like he could be the next. And Miami's been known to do it at times. So yeah, I just love this name. I don't know if there's anything else to add, but definitely encouraging that the velo is up 2 miles per hour, which is major.
Yeah. There's some other pretty interesting changes here. The shape on his fastball is a lot different, getting a lot more ride, looking like it's, getting more unexpected movement out of that, mm-hmm. from his arm angle. The pitch mix versus lefties now is more intriguing, where it's slider, fastball, changeup, and a curve at 14% of the time. So he has essentially 4 pitches that he can go to versus lefties. Then versus righties, he has the slider, fastball, changeup, and sweeper. And it's like it was 70%
it's a deep
slider
arsenal,
or sweeper in that start to righties. So interesting. And like, you know, a lot of that could be just based on the handedness of the team that he faced. And it's hard to make too much noise out of just one start. But hey, that's what we have. And it's interesting. So the command, as far as at least the control, has always been good, right? The walk rates have been
amazing.
Really good.
Yeah, last year it was 2.9%. So, that's like George Kirby.
Like, like if you add a little bit of stuff to a guy that has this great command, like that's a way that you could lead to a breakout. So I am planning on adding Jansen Jung where I can and seeing where this goes.
Yeah, I like it. That's a fun wild card there. A lot of people just like dismissing it, but yeah, these are the moments. All right, we've got a handful of other pitchers, and then we will definitely get to some of the other velo numbers and some pitch mix changes. Might be running long, but tis the season. Yeah. So we're going to take our second ad break, and we'll be right back after this. Okay, so Steve, that one, it deserved it, but that one took some time. So Randy Vasquez is the next name. Hate to rush through this one because he's another interesting one, 27% rostered on Yahoo. Same as Junk with the jump from 93 to 95. We saw him have a terrific first start, 8 strikeouts in 6 innings, 13 whiffs. He is at Fenway on Saturday. I know Boston has been very gettable in the struggling lineup, but Fenway scares me a little bit for Randy Vasquez. What I found interesting looking like at some of the other stuff, because the velo jump kind of tips you off to check out, to take a deeper look, more break on almost every one of his pitches. So thoughts on Randy Vasquez? I'm not sure we've ever even brought him up on the show. Real or fake here?
I'm intrigued. There's okay. A few other guys like Randy Vasquez, on the Mariners, who else is there that had a good start? Emerson Hancock. Like I'm yep. interested in these guys. I'm not sure I'm fully sold. Randy Vasquez sort of has potentially been an interesting guy because he's had rotation spots and has some decent stuff. And the fact that he got 13 whiffs makes it interesting. It's
good ballpark to pitch.
Yeah, like here's what could happen with Vasquez. Like, he could kind of get bombed or give up 4 or 5 runs versus the Red Sox, but the velocity holds and the stuff still grades out well. And like, even though he's dropped in leagues, he still may be an ad. Like, that's where mm-hmm. I'm at with Randy Vasquez. Like, essentially, he's a watch list guy for me that I think has the potential to be maybe a little bit more with yeah. the Padres there.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. He's kind of got a little. What one thing I like is that he's got 4-seamer, cutter, sinker. Like, I feel like though it's like the Brandon Woodruff thing where we've got a handful
of fastball or poor fastball. Yeah, mm-hmm. it's. I mean, the Brewers do it all the time. Like, if one of your fastballs doesn't grade out well, just throw more of them. The Mets do it, right? They give mm-hmm. guys cutters, sinkers, and go yeah. from there.
I like it. Okay, so that's Vasquez. Keeping it moving here, we talked about Shohei Imanaga. He had a rough first inning in his, but then recovered really nicely. Homer, yeah, 3-run homer, and then had 7 strikeouts the rest of the way. He starts at a very low velocity, but it's ticked up from where it was last year. He was another one at the home stretch,
And he had really good success in 2024 at the velocity he's back to now. Yeah. He just had a groin injury and then sat 90, and it was a big issue last year with that, but you know, he doesn't need to be 95 to be successful. He has that amazing shape on it and the amazing splitter. So the fact that he's back to where he was in 2024 is super encouraging.
Yeah, it is. And Chris Sale is next on the list, which might be our oldest at age 37, ticking up on velocity. Last year was sitting 94.8, and this year it's up 95.8. So just please stay healthy, Chris Sale, and you will continue to be the ace that people signed up for there. Already talked about Matthew Liberatore, but he was one that had a really good spring, and we were watching closely to see could he be a breakout with all the opportunity with the Cardinals. First start results were good. The under-the-hood stuff was not as impressive. But the velo was at least up. Today the velo was down a little bit, so Liberatore is back on the list of me not caring as much. And then, man, Sandy Alcantara started today in what, complete game. Maddox, we'll talk about him in a future section. Yeah, under 100 pitches, complete game. It was as vintage as Sandy Alcantara gets. But let's put a pin in that one because I think pitch mix changes will be a better topic to talk about for Sandy. Steve, you want to talk about the breaking velocity section as maybe breaking an off speed of who's making changes under the hood or pumping up velo on some non-fastball pitches?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just I added here, we don't need to get too much into it, but it's on that leaderboard on Savant. You could sort by year-to-year changes and group by pitch type for velocity. I know that the first thing that we think of is fastball, and that's probably the most telling, but there's also a lot that goes on with the other pitches too, and it's interesting to see if guys are throwing harder, right? Like we've talked about how sliders are basically, you know, much more successful once they hit 85 miles an hour than like when you get to like 90 miles an hour. There's only a few guys in the league that could do that. So to see breaking speed velocity increases are really interesting. And also like just shows that, hey, maybe there's a different type of pitch here. Even though a slider is classified as a slider, if a guy has a major change or a few ticks in velocity change, it could indicate that it's a different type of slider, and maybe that could lead to some more success. So guys that popped up on the breaking velocity group improvers are Mike Burrows, Kevin Gausman, Shota Umanaga, and Yuri Perez, guys that have had varying degrees of success or at least look interesting in the first part of the first start of the season. Two starts for Gausman that look great. Just encouraging stuff, and you know, on the Umanaga end, that shows me a bit of health, comfort. Same with Gausman too. Burrows, I know there was his popular sleeper, and that could only help his stuff. And then Perez, like a reason why we like year two after TJ. Like, was there something that he was uncomfortable with throwing as hard as he could, or now is able to add a few ticks to his breaking stuff that could have us more excited. So cool tool, and just want to note it because we really just look at fastball velocity when we look at these changes for velocity.
Yep. And then to rattle off the off-speed velocity list, some of these repeats, but Dylan Cease, Devin Williams, just an interesting reliever one. Chris Sale also on this. George Kirby, Tyler Mahle, Cade Horton, Imanaga again, Sandy Alcantara again, and Dustin May again. So this one always kind of messes with my brain, Steve, because I'm always thinking you'd want your changeups to have differential. But I guess if your whole arsenal is getting faster, it's just less time for hitters to kind of react. And if everything, it's kind of like an all ships rise mentality, right?
I mean, and if in cases like Cease and Umanaga, like their fastball's up, their changeup's also up. Like it's a sign of health. You know, you keep that gap too in a way, but also like it's a way. Like Cease's changeup is totally different. Like he had, like I remember when Cease first started those changeups, they were almost like jokes. Like remember he was throwing like those 59 mile an hour changeups that were like not deceptive at all. Like now he has a legit changeup that he's throwing like 83 miles an hour. So you could see that on these sort of leaderboards there.
No, I like it. Okay, so that rounds out our kind of velo changes. Jumping over to pitch mix changes, why don't we group this by pitch type? So we'll start with the cutter, because having a cutter to kind of the off-handed opponent, we know is extremely effective. It felt like last year, I know Nick would always say it's like the year of the cutter, but Jack Leiter with his cutter, Roki Sasaki, who looked better than kind of we expected, the implosion after how rough his spring was reasonable. And then Mike Soroka, who loved to see it just from a baseball standpoint for the tough luck career he's had with injuries. He had 5 innings, 10 strikeouts, 12 whiffs. I know was a very popular ad in the past 48 hours, but another one who brought in a cutter. And so these three guys, Steve, Jack Leiter, is he doing it? 21 whiffs was insane. Roki Sasaki, is he rosterable and could he have a path to being dependable? And then Soroka, who, like I said, is one of the bigger ads. Like, what would you want to add on these three?
Yeah, encouraging, glad that there's tweaks happening. I think that this gives me confidence, especially in Leiter's case, that like I could see the, or had him as someone that could potentially break out. A lot of others people do. The stuff has been so good. Second half was good last year. Adding this and getting 21 whiffs, despite the fact that there's still things to work on and the fact that the fastball and the overall command still is questionable and we need to see it on a consistent basis, especially from someone that has had such trouble with command and inconsistency before, it's something that I'm really glad that I'm seeing in Leiter's pitch mix. And it always seems like he's tweaking and getting closer and closer to the pitcher that we hope him to be or hope for him to be. And this new cutter is potentially another way that that could happen, right? Because we've seen it without it. Like there's days where his stuff plays up, and without the improvements in the shaking command in the past, we've seen Leiter's upside. And he's another guy that I think it's just a matter of time. And all of this is just showing me that it may be sooner rather than later. And Sasaki too, like I was totally out on Sasaki as a starter, even though like I liked him as a reliever and he looked like he could potentially be like a closer there. And that dream was sort of shattered when they signed Diaz and talked about him going back to being a starter. But it was a lot better than, like you said, a lot better than what happened in the spring. I'm still not like, killing myself that I don't have many shares of him or would be rushing to add him, because I still think there's more questions with him than even with Leiter. But the fact that there is a cutter and there's something that's being worked on, again, like there's a reason why this guy was so exciting coming over. And like it's not, you know, we have so many of these guys that come over from MPB and from Japan that are seasoned pros with 10 years of experience. Like that's not the case with Sasaki. He's not nearly this polished product, and this is all on the path to do that. And then Soroka, you know, Soroka has this upside. Like he does this, like, and we've seen these things string together. I would need to see it for a long stretch of time with Soroka based on just, you know, how often he's injured, how much inconsistency there has been, even when he has pitched in the last few years. But there are a lot of things to like with Soroka. I know we've talked about him as a potential sleeper plenty of times on the show and a potential ad. And I think he is exactly just that. Like he's someone like I'd rather have Soroka than like Randy Vasquez or Emerson Hancock, right? Like,
yep.
I think even though maybe there's more upside in both those guys, I think there's more known and like projectable. I think there's another 5-inning, 10 strikeout game in Soroka's next 6 starts or so, you know, maybe that's the best of the 6, but I don't know if, I don't know if Vasquez or Emerson Hancock will be usable at all in any of those starts. I know Soroka will probably be usable in most of those starts.
Agree. Yeah. I mean, I think I had Soroka both on his debut season, and then I was watching live when he came back and had recovered. And in that first game pitching, I think tore his Achilles or something. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And then tore it again in the rehab. Yeah.
That's right. So like now we're looking at a guy who's 28 years old, and in terms of like major league innings, he's only had 420 over seven seasons. So it's like he has so little mileage, right? It's like that's he might as well be in his third season in terms of how much he's thrown, and he's 28 years old. But the card on Soroka is always that he was a pitcher's pitcher who like completely was all about sequencing, was all about, you know, working in the smart.
He was
command
like a command
control.
Artist.
Command artist. So I was just looking at him next to like George Kirby, just flipping back and forth from their pages, like both, you know, like 6'5" righties who have great command. But Soroka's bumped the usage of the slurve up a ton in that first start, to where now that looks like, you know, his not only his primary pitch, but also one that has extreme swing and miss potential. So yeah, I know the, like he's not the velocity guy at just 94, But I think that adding a cutter would, it can only help for a guy that, like, you know, is now working five pitches. That said, for each of these guys, these cutters are all at like the infancy stage of how they're used. So it's something to watch throughout the season, because it might be like a Christopher Sanchez thing where we were all excited last spring that he had a cutter, and then he slowly kind of phased it out. He still ended up being, you know, Cy Young candidate. But yeah, so that's Soroka and that group. Talking about the sweeper guys, and maybe we'll throw in the slider too, because I wanted to add Jake Irvin into here. But for sweepers, we got Joe Boyle, who added both a sinker and a sweeper. Ryan Pepiot is coming back soon, so I think Boyle's on his last sub start this Saturday against the Twins. But against the Cardinals, he looked good. It didn't quite look like Joe Boyle, because he only had four strikeouts in six innings and he had zero walks.
Yeah,
I think you would have guessed nine strikeouts and five walks or something, and just 10 whiffs. But maybe this is, I don't know, one of those maturing starts. And with him adding these pitches, obviously, you know, the Rays have our trust as an organization. So Boyle is one that I think was a great stream, or is a great stream for this weekend. And then one that, you know, if life finds a way, he has my attention. And then Sandy Alcantara with the sweeper that he's brought in. Holy smokes, man. We talked about him a lot, Steve, and I'm ashamed to say I do not have shares of Sandy, but now we're looking at 16 innings without an earned run. He's gotten decent whiffs, but it's more the just durability and classic Sandy with the control. He's thrown the sweeper a little bit. It's more than a show me pitch, but I think he's done it like 10 times per start, more or less. And yeah, it just looks like Sandy is full on locked to be like an SP1-2 range, like the good old days. So anything to add on Sandy, Joe Boyle, or Jake Irvin, which I know we didn't talk much about, but he was an interesting one as well, who tweaked a slider and has seen some good results.
I think it's a pretty big miss that we were not more in on Sandy Alcantara. Mm-hmm. If we liked Yuri Perez year two after Tommy John, we should have liked Sandy Alcantara. He had the second half where he looked like he was mostly back, and now it looks like he's like back to the Sandy that we know and love. Like, there really should, I think we thought he was mispriced last offseason, right? Because the velocity was back. It was a full year after TJ. Like, he didn't come back when he could have at the end of 2024. And there was some hype around him, but not much. And that turned out to be not really the correct call. But I think those who invested at Sandy at his relatively discounted price this year are going to reap the benefits. He looks,
we got him. Very, we got him, Steve. Good. We got him in our too early mock with the pitcherless league at 159.
Should have been more that. Should have been. That was my only share. A league that doesn't count.
Can we chalk this up as another one that goes in the Justin Steele camp? It seems like every year in that mock, we have our convictions, and then we let the long off season just kind of get us excited about these other youngsters and everything. But yeah,
Did we have
man, these names are all over that show. That draft, we had Jackson Merrill.
Did we have Dylan Cease. Did we have Senga?
We had Dylan Cease. Let me see if we had Senga. Nope. We had JJ Weatherholt.
Okay.
Caglione at 224, but yeah. I mean, maybe it was just a different show that we talked about Senga. I'll double check. But yeah, I know you were in on that especially. Yeah. So, okay. Well, we got to, now I'm just shopping our old rundowns here. So we'll keep it rolling. I do want to just hit on Jake Irvin, because he's one that we brought up last season, and it was kind of like a laugher because we were joking about, I'm always bringing up the guys who have like 7 feet of extension. Mm-hmm. His extension has increased from 7'1" to 7'3". TJ Stats, Thomas Nestico, put out a tweet about how he had tweaked his slider. So this is just kind of an alteration on an existing pitch. But at the Cubs, he had 5 innings, 7 strikeouts, 14 whiffs, just 1 walk. He's a deep league, like, watch list guy, but like, it's just a name that in past years I've been like, oh, could he take a step forward? And with a different slider and the early results, again, not trying to overreact on it, but let's just keep an eye on it, because like last year, a lot of his swing and miss stuff looked underwhelming. Like, he had a fifth percentile whiff rate. In this first start, it was like 65th percentile, and he has the extension there, which makes his 94 mile per hour play, like, it's the old Bailey Ober thing, right? That the 94 mile per hour kind of tracks like it's like 98-99, just because of how quick it jumps on you. And then adding a pretty effective slider on top of that could be the recipe for a little breakout. He also threw the slider more than he did last season. So yeah, I've got him on the watch list here for Jake Irvin. I said my piece.
Yeah, there's been stretches where Jake Irvin's been like decently valuable, right? Like
we brought him up last year. Let me double check on.
He had a good start last year, right? I think at certain points, or a stretch at least, where he was usable. I know Nick in his write up was a little bit more hesitant, and it was like, you know, yeah, Jake Irvin's a professional pitcher, and these are going to happen, but
he had a pretty good April last year.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, he did.
low whip. It really rough second half. Yeah. I mean, 7.73 ERA rough. So, like, yeah. This is the yeah. deep. This is the Humberto Castellanos call from me. that it's most likely going to blow up. But just put the little watch list note on Jake Irvin there.
Yeah. I mean, and the Nationals have like completely revamped their pitching development, right? And it could
that's
be
right. Yeah.
it could be something. I mean, the velocity, you know, the curveball has extra sweep. There's not too much of a change, but there could be some more here. We'll see how it sticks. Like, he's more in like the Harrison Hancock and Vasquez grouping for me, but like, I kind of might prefer Irvin the most out of that. Maybe.
That's interesting. Okay,
I would say with conviction, but
that would be a super hot take. I think Irvin's widely available, but you wouldn't have to. You have the luxury probably of watching another start, which I can look that up. But it's a really good point, Steve, that the Nationals have Simon Matthews now as their pitching coach, who was with the Reds before this.
Yeah.
And the Reds have been another organization that we've talked about. Like, they've done a pretty nice job of making something out of nothing, or capitalizing on, like, you know, evolving Hunter Green from a cherry bomb into an ace. I know he obviously had such a, you know, high ceiling to begin with, but yeah, I think that's a good call. I'll check out what Irvin's next matchup is, because that's a good one to watch. But in the meantime, change up is our last pitch, last order of business on the show. We talked about Dylan Cease. He's added a new change up. He only threw it 8 times, but 3 whiffs with it. It looked nasty. Like, it was all, you know, the gifs on Twitter, very effective. And then Kyle Harrison, man, maybe, talk to me about Harrison and your take on him, because a name that's been on our radar for a while, but it looks early on like he might be doing it here, with the Brew crew. So
I think of the like lower rostered guys' names, Harrison and Leiter to me are like, okay, this could be it for them. It looks like it could be major breakouts.
Could be here.
There were, you know, Harrison, as like, he had those gaudy strikeout numbers with the Giants, and then didn't really work out. Red Sox didn't really get much out of him, and then leave it to the Brewers to do this. Like, they acquired him for a reason, it seems. And I would not be surprised if, you know, Harrison's a guy that got added this week and is going to be on rosters for the rest of the season.
Uh-huh. Yep. Okay, so here's my oh boy. Everybody, if you're still with us, get out your phone, because Saturday at 3:05 Central is the Dodgers against the Nationals, and Jake Irvin will be on the bump for that.
So he's going to be available. If he shoves, he's going to be gone.
Put an alert in your phone for 4 o'clock Central to see if the first four innings, Jake Irvin has a zero on the runs and four strikeouts. And if that's the case, this might be a thing.
Like in unlimited ad leagues, like he might just be, okay, add him, don't start him, and then see from there, and then you can drop if he gets kind of rocked or whatever. But yeah, if he shoves versus the Dodgers, it could be, that's all it takes early in the season, right?
It is. Okay, I got my phone alert for Jake Irvin on Saturday. If my wife asks what our plans are, I'll have to talk through what Jake Irvin means. So, all right, so that wraps us up. Thank you guys for sticking with us. Ton of names, but great show and love the rundown, Steve. This time of year, it's looking for an edge in any department. So I'm personally mourning the Cody Ponce. Talk about the Soroka thing, man. So it feels so exactly like that.
He looked great, too.
It's the toughest part about the sport. He did look great. And so anyway, now I'm just moved him to IL, and I'm kind of waiting for the next pop-up. So,
Same here.
Not to end on the downer, but everybody, welcome back to baseball. We'll be here every week, and can't wait to get into more waiver wire shows in the coming weeks. So until then, that's episode 208. Thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks, guys. Later.